As winter fast approaches Alaska, the Coast Guard responds to emergencies all over the state in Ketchikan.
My neighbor over there, there's a skiff going in a circle. A guy landing there, I think he's dead.
In Sitka, rescuers battle hurricane-force winds to find an overdue vessel.
We knew that we were in for a long morning with the conditions that we took off into.
And in Kodiak, an unknown distress call sends the Coast Guard into the Alaskan wilderness.
You don't know what it is. If it's somebody who's lost, somebody who's cold, somebody had a run-in with wildlife. So we're like, okay, let's go check it out.
The vast Alaskan wilderness, a place where beauty is cloaked by danger. Here every day, 350 highly trained men and women risk their lives to save others. America's deadliest waters are protected by Coast Guard Alaska.
I'm Lieutenant Simon Green, and I'm a search and rescue pilot stationed at Air Station Sitka, Alaska. If I'm not working, spending time with my family here in Sitka, we actually spend a lot of time just walking downtown. And when it's ringed with snow-capped mountains and it's quiet, it's a blast.
Why can't we cross the street?
My wife is named Mary Grace. Phenomenal mom. We just had our second kid, so now we have a 22-month-old and a 2-week-old. So a lot of work, but she's just a phenomenal person.
I have no idea what this one's going to be.
She's going to be something that has to do with adventure for sure.
Yeah, she definitely takes after me. She's pretty fearless, pretty adventurous. Or maybe a stripper. I don't know. Hey, get away from that pole. Keep walking.
Sitka is quite different from anywhere I've ever lived, just in terms of the smallness of it, the weather, but I really like it. It's a very small town feel. The Coast Guard community is really tight-knit. We're really liking it so far.
Hey, Ed, look at the two bald eagles up there. You just see their little fannies? See?
I
love it here. Just having the natural beauty of Sitka. I think most pilots want to come to Alaska. I think professionally it's kind of at the apex of what we do in terms of weather, in terms of missions. We just enjoy the hell out of it.
Sector was saying that their boats have looked at the marine forecast. The marine forecast is calling for 60-plus knot winds.
So we'll probably be leaving here around 7. Then we're going to be following the CQ Strait through Rocky Pass down towards Point Baker and then over to Wrangell.
We're looking for a 22-foot vessel, individual transiting from one small town to another small town in southeast Alaska through a channel. And basically he was supposed to be in at 6 p.m. last night, and nobody's heard from him.
The crew had been out all night looking for an overdue vessel. They've been flying for almost 6 hours. They were going to bag out, which means they can no longer fly. Their fatigue level has been met, so we'll need another crew to come in and prosecute a first flight search.
Sir, we've got our guard set up with Sector.
Roger.
Flight controls and flight instruments all look good. System instruments are in the green.
If there is someone out there, their chance of stumbling upon, you know, a house on the shore or safety, shelter, warmth is almost zero. And if you go in the water and you're wet at all, with the water temperatures and the air temperatures and the wind around here, your rate of survival goes down drastically.
The thing that makes Alaska unique is how unpredictable the weather is. So what you see when you take off and what the weather is going to be like right around the corner could potentially be and is frequently two very different things. The only thing that's consistent about Alaska is inconsistency. You don't know what to expect. In a place like Southeast Alaska, there's a good chance that if this person is in distress, that they're in it by themselves. And if we don't get on scene, no one else will.
The whole idea of first light search is to be on scene as the sun's rising.
Coast Guard Sector Juno, Coast Guard Sector Juno.
We're airborne
from Sitka, Alaska for search and rescue for the overdue vessel.
The boat hadn't been seen in either of the two villages. And up here, you know, it's not like there's a third village that you can just pull into and the guy decided to spend the night there. Chances are if he wasn't in Cake and he wasn't in Wrangell, he he was in distress.
Be advised, on scene weather, visibility 5 miles, and ceilings are around 2,000 feet over.
As we got out to outside waters for our low visibility route and made our turn to the south, we got hit with 50 to 60 knot winds. We knew that we were in for a long morning with the conditions that we took off into right out of Sitka.
So that's the wind coming up. They call it hurricane force winds, yeah.
Our guys are going to be making a left hand turn 180 degrees and out the right door as soon as they come around. It's going to be a little harbor. Anything that really matches. They all look like fishing boats.
So what we did first was we did a sweep of the harbor and coastline area of Cake, and then we got a call from our sector ops center.
Sector Juno, 6034, go ahead.
Roger, 6034. Looks like we might have a vessel relaying for the vessel you're looking for, the Keeper. The closest we can tell, he's on the Point Barry side of Conclusion Island, over.
Roger, good job. EFT Hilo, we'll be there within 15 minutes.
He said he was in distress, his boat was sinking, and he needed to abandon ship. He gave a geographical position, and so we basically made a beeline directly to his position. And you actually hear the vessel themselves, and they're saying they're sinking. I think that's when everything kind of changes. We started flying a lot faster. We started setting up the back of the aircraft to affect the rescue with the basket, the litter, the hoist, getting all that stuff ready to go. So when we arrive on scene, we're not wasting time doing that. So we go from just a crew to a search and rescue crew, and everything crystallizes at that moment.
And that's Point Barry right there at 11 o'clock. And so he should be dead ahead. There he is, 1 o'clock low.
You got door speeds.
When we first got on scene, we saw the boat was fairly open in the back. I knew it was going to be a little bit tricky to hover over that. But the guy physically was talking to us and physically could move and do things. So we decided to pull him off the boat just using the basket.
That's all. All right, guys, we're going to attempt the basket without trail line to the stern of the vessel.
I'm going to talk to him for a second. And Vessel Keeper from Coast Guard Helicopter.
Yes, sir, I read you.
Our plan is to pick you up with a basket. Once it's on deck, go ahead and climb into it. Keep your legs and arms inside the basket at all times, and I will bring you up.
Fire.
And rest of the team, so you're ready for a basket for recovery of survivor. All right, and begin push.
Once we actually moved over the boat, the seas were a little bit bigger than we had originally anticipated. 6 to 8 with some 10-footers rolling in. And the boat was not underway. It's a lot easier to hoist to a boat that's moving. This boat was dead in the water. And so we can blow it around, and it's being blown and affected a lot more by the winds and waves.
You're briefing up. One of the more hairy evolutions that we can do in terms of a basket delivery to a boat, the biggest thing that you're trying to manage is doing it quickly, but not rushing anything to the point that it's not going to be safe.
Survivor is getting inside basket.
If we were to snag the basket on deck and have to shear the hoist, we're likely going to see this guy end up in the water and have to get pretty creative from that point.
We had a call that came in, and it was an overdue 22-foot bay liner with one person on board, and he was got underway from Cake and was going to Wrangell, Alaska, and I believe he was 6 hours overdue by the time the Coast Guard was notified. The weather was pretty bad. It was gusting as high as 60 knots. That makes it quite a bit more challenging. Fortunately, the second crew that went out looking for the survivor, right before they arrived on scene, they heard a Good Samaritan vessel, and they were able to fly right to him.
Thank you.
that?
My name's Lester Koontz. I live in Wrangell, Alaska. I've lived in Alaska for 47 years. Next month, I'll be 48.
Great forward play. Right after that.
I was going through Rocky Pass, and motor conked out about halfway through, and then the boat slid, and I heard a sickening crunch, and I figured at that point I'd punched a hole somewhere in the forward part of the boat. And I was going, no, no, no. I ran back, lifted my engine room cowling, and it was completely underwater. At that point, the boat was filling pretty fast. And here come the weather. And boy, did it come. And it came in a hurry. Yes, I was completely nervous at that point. I go, I got to get out of here.
He's good, sir. He's not hurt or anything. Because he's warm. Okay, cool.
When I heard the chopper coming, that was a big relief. It was a sound I always remember. If the Coast Guard hadn't showed up, I had 10, maybe 20 minutes tops to stay on that boat, and then I would have swam for the island. Alaskan waters at this time of year is like jumping into a cooler full of ice. You don't last very long. The hypothermia can set in within 10 minutes, some people 20 minutes. I consider myself pretty tough, but not that tough.
Hey, buddy, got any shoes? Yeah, you want one? Yeah. Well, a survivor does.
He wasn't hypothermic. He was in good shape. The only thing that he was upset about was the fact that he had left his tobacco on board.
Here he goes, Ricky. We got something.
First time I've had a survivor request a dip. That's pretty cool.
That was a thank God moment. Would like to say thanks to the chopper crew that got me out and all the Coast Guard. It was a good feeling to know that you're being looked for.
On the way back from Wrangell to Sitka, in the short time that it took us to drop off this individual, his vessel had been taken by the seas. The thing had sunk, it was gone, and there was no sign of it whatsoever.
So today is kind of like the culmination of everything that we trained for. I think it's why everybody, especially at an air station, joined the Coast Guard. We get to go out in weather conditions like today, 60 plus knot winds, and pull a guy off of a sinking boat and save his life. That's a pretty phenomenal way to spend a day.
Begin. 1, 2, 3.
Here at Kodiak, we have an airman apprentice program.
25, stop rocking, 26.
I like to see what they're capable of doing and see how far they can push themselves mentally and physically.
No rock, that one's not gonna count. That doesn't count. No rest, let's go. You're done. Lawson, at the beginning of this test, you were told there is no rest on these exercises. Is that correct? That's two exercises we've completed. That's two exercises that you've been trying to rest in the middle of. That is a no-go. Do I need to make this any more clear?
No, Chief.
Get your head on straight and focus and do what is expected of you. You've been in the program for a month, and yet you still continue to try to push the envelope. This is an integrity issue. I'm not going to tolerate anymore. You understand?
Yes, Chief.
You try to cheat. You try to shortchange something, you are done. Okay?
Yes, Chief.
Pull up bars.
It's our job to screen these guys, and integrity is huge.
Doesn't matter if you can do 1,000 sit-ups if they're not good sit-ups. You got it?
Yes, Chief.
Out the bar, knock them out.
Five good ones all the way down.
We all have to have the right integrity to get the job done. You know, you go out there and make a situation worse, you know, they can get hurt. And these guys have to go home every night. We all have families.
I'm doing this is so that we get our heads in game.
If we're out there racing after a fisherman, I want that to strike fear in the hearts of my guys. We need to get that.
Yeah!
You see that there was one individual who was unconscious on the boat.
I jumped over and killed the engine. Couldn't really get a pulse on him. He wasn't breathing. My main focus was trying to help this guy out.
Swimming recently, right?
guys.
Okay.
I'm Captain Joe Hester. I'm the commanding officer of the Coast Guard Cutter Sherman. We've come up here to do a patrol for the 17th Coast Guard District, and our job is going to be enforcing fisheries and doing search and rescue as it's necessary.
If we're out there racing after fishermen who, when they tell us they're going into the Gumby suits, I want that to strike fear in the hearts of my guys. We need to get there. And I told the bosun, have you ever done this? He said, oh, I've done Gumby suit swims. I said, well, I challenge you. I bet you I'm better.
All right, 10 on this side is on my team. The 10 on that side is on the captain's team.
Yeah! Remember who's on whose team? The reason we're doing this, we need to be able to trust this gear, and our guys need to know that they can survive. And I also want them to know, at the end of the day, we really want to stay on this boat, keep this boat afloat.
That's one of the reasons I'm doing this, is so that we get our heads in game. And if we ever get the call, we're putting on our Gumbies. And I want you guys to be just as concerned as you are for your own safety. I want you to be that concerned about the fisherman who's putting on his Gumby because he thinks he's going down.
Well, clearly the captain won. Was anybody surprised? I think the bosun threw it, though. He's more fit than I am. Let's help our shipmates, all right? All right, guys, here we go. Are you good, guys? All right, gather around for a second. The point of this drill, you have to have some fun. That's a good thing. But it's also learn to trust our equipment. We'll see how it works. And when we hear the call that a fisherman's going into a Gumby, they're going to be out in the middle of the Bering Sea, which is another 10 degrees colder than this. So imagine how scared you'd be outside of land, and your boat's going down, and they put out the call of the Coast Guard saying, we're donning our Gumbies. That's why we're here. That's why we brought old Sherman this many thousand miles, all right? I trust my gear more than I did before. Anybody else?
Yes,
all righty. Good job, both teams.
We're taking a warm shower.
All righty, guys.
Lawson, you ready to go PT?
Yes, sir.
We got to catch all your stuff up and get you up to date.
Okay.
We have airmen here going through pre-training. I've been assigned Airman Lawson's mentor.
All right. You're up.
He's had some bumps in the road, so he needs to have the right guy mentor him. I think the senior person. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
How many pedals more see?
Start. Check them out. 10 of them.
My name is Brett Lawson. I want to be AST, Aviation Survival Technician. The reason I joined the Coast Guard is to become a rescue swimmer and have that opportunity to save someone's life.
Lawson, let's go!
Hi, Pest Morse.
Every step, that's integrity. Back down. Integrity is important in the Coast Guard because if you're not doing the right thing at the right time, somebody's going to die. We're the end-all, be-all, you know? We're the last chain of this person's survival. Main arrest. Why is honesty important? What's our main job as aviation survival technicians? What's our main job?
Main job.
You don't know what our main job is?
Yes.
Rescue swimmer is probably 5% of our job. Okay.
You maintain equipment.
Okay. What kind of equipment?
Yes, your parachutes, pumps.
What's the name of that stuff? You better find that out. You better find information. You better run and ask an AST right now.
All right, Pastor Morse.
Go, find it. What's our main job, Lawson? If you don't know that, week four, we got problems. That's 95% of our job. Good God. Week four. Lawson here is learning about integrity. You know, if he's not fitting a mold, he'll be gone.
No, Pastor Marcy.
Week four, we're gonna know what our main job is. Wait, I know where it's at. I had to find something.
Pastor Marcy, is it pyrotechnics?
What? It's in the top block somewhere. What's our main job? What's it say?
Inspections.
This line.
Can you read Aviation life support.
Okay. Back upstairs. As an AST, our main job is what?
Aviation life support.
Aviation survival technician.
I don't think he's going to make it. I think he's got too much baggage in his head. I think he's scared of the water. But I say to him, prove me wrong. I don't make it personal. I keep it professional. And I want him to prove me wrong. And if he does, I'll be pleasantly surprised. And I'll welcome him into this rig. But he's got some work to do.
We had a good Samaritan that pulled up to the dock, said that he had passed a boat that was doing circles, and he said it looked like there was somebody unconscious on board.
It's right over there in the camp.
Alaska is a vast and immense state, and in addition to Kodiak, we have units all across the state, and including Ketchikan, Alaska, where they are responsible for near-coastal marine response.
Ketchikan is the first port coming up into Alaska, so we get a lot of commercial fishing traffic coming through here. The weather up here is pretty extreme. In Ketchikan, we get lots and lots of rescues that we do here.
Skiff going in a circle, a guy landing there, I think he's dead. I come up alongside the skiff and tried to get it stopped and get him, but I can't.
Okay, wait, you come around right here?
Yeah, sure.
Let me go. Yeah, go get Swanner.
We had a good Samaritan that pulled up to the dock. I guess he saw that we were down there working on the boats. He said that he had passed a boat that was doing circles, and when he tried to get close to it, he said it looked like there was somebody unconscious on board, and it was within 500 yards of the station here.
Sure, we got a first aid kit and all that other stuff?
Yeah, and me too, just brought down there.
All right.
Seaman Cunningham came up to me, and he told me that there was a boat going in circles right across from us in the Narrows. We got a boat crew underway.
The boat that we went out to investigate today was approximately 300 to 400 yards actually off the station itself on Panic Island. When we came alongside, we could see that there was one individual who was unconscious on the boat, and unfortunately, his engine was jammed all the way over, so his boat was just making sharp, really tight circles to the right side there. So I had to make the decision on whether or not I was going to let him run into the rocks or, you know, try to take that extra effort, take the hit on the 25 today. Came alongside, took the hit. Seaman Vanetta made a great throw with one of our alongside lines that happened to snag one of the bits on the forward part of the boat. And after that, we pretty much tied up the boat as fast as possible.
I jumped over and killed the engine. He was unconscious. Couldn't really get a pulse on him. He wasn't breathing. I just started doing CPR. Baker just took us right back to the base.
I grabbed the EMT kit and the oxygen tank and started administering oxygen.
As we're coming across, Seaman Vanetta and Petty Officer Forrest were letting me know, you know, the condition of the individual, and letting me know that he wasn't breathing, that he didn't have a pulse. So that kind of put it in my mind that I needed to get back to the station as fast as possible, but still maintaining a safe speed, so I'm not throwing them around so that they can do their job properly.
We just had a team down there ready to meet them because crew of three on a boat, you know, you're doing CPR, you're taking care of the person, and you need other people there to help them.
We got EMT en route?
Yes.
When we got back, I continued doing CPR. SMBM Baker got on the AED, attached it to him, which sends a shock to help revive the guy.
Don't touch.
Yeah, you're on. Get low, though.
If needed, begin CPR.
Go.
We were putting everything we had into it, doing a proper CPR, make sure the AED was hooked up properly. And so, you know, you can't be performing CPR while trying to analyze to use the AED. So just having those downtimes in between performing CPR, you know, and just trying your hardest, you know, you're wearing out so fast, but you never wanted to just give up because you're just so focused on trying to get this guy, you know, better and help him out.
There you go. Watch your feet with the lines.
We carried the litter up with a member on it for the EMTs.
All right, got it?
Yep. Loaded them into the ambulance. The door's closed, and it's their case now.
That's a good thing, the Coast Guard's here. They knew what to do immediately, and they did it. And I only think it only took them two attempts to get the boat stabilized and secured alongside, and then there were people right on board. Yeah, it was pretty impressive, really, I thought. I love the Coast Guard.
Lawson has had some demons, as I say, in training in the pool. He definitely fears it, and we're going to see where he's at today. We're going to go to the pool and see what he's made of.
Get in the pool. Let's go. Ready, go.
Now, this training is more about the mental side. Physically, we can make anybody into a rescue swimmer, but mentally, it's where rubber meets the road. That's where it's at. Airman Lawson's in the pool, and he's doing a 500-yard swim, and all of a sudden he's freaking having a seizure out there. You know, I don't know what's going on. I jump in, we get him out, me and Chief.
What shoulder injury have you had?
When is this? It's my right one, the one that's been occurring.
Okay, wait a minute. Since before you got in the program?
I got in the program, and then I heard it again in the program.
Let me ask you this. Did you disclose this injury to us? No. You hid it from us. I know. I read your medical questionnaire.
Yeah, I never said I had a shoulder injury.
Get out of the pool.
Come on.
Let's go.
He's got an injury, reoccurring injury over the past year and a half, I don't know, and never really told us about it. So he's going to get evaluated and see what it's all about. Get him healthy, then we'll worry about what's going to go on later with him. Just tell me what happened in the pool.
Awesome. I was just swimming my 500, and I just felt it started getting a little tight, but I just said it was just muscle. And then I was swimming, and then it just popped, and then I just stopped.
Bring my shoulder over to swim, take my stroke, and my shoulder popped. Gave out, and I buckled in the water, grabbed my shoulder, and couldn't swim anymore.
This is definitely a game changer right now for you. I'm sure you're aware of this. We'll see what's going on, and it's up to Chief to make decisions. The potential repercussion for Amber Lawson obviously would be having to drop the program due to medical reasons. You know, that's probably my mind right now.
Lawson, call me up when you
got
it. I'm going to hang out with you, okay?
We'll do it fast, Marcy.
I suspected that there's a hunter out there.
Come down a little bit. Can you come down? What is that right there? You guys seeing that hot spot?
Over there, Captain.
be the Cadillac.
That's the Cadillac of ATVs right there. Today we've got Captain Bill Deal, our skipper, myself, a number of the other officers, and we're going to show them the trails. And they're fairly new to Kodiak. We've been here, myself, it's my eighth year, I guess, and skipper is about 7 or 8 years as well. So it's a fun ride. It's 18 miles, I think, 17 or 18 miles in. Is that right, skipper?
Yeah, yeah.
And then we're going to go and do some fishing. We might see some bears.
It is my first ATV trip up here, but, you know, I grew up doing a lot of kind of off-road dirt bike type of stuff. So it's not going to be totally out of the norm. It's fairly a benign trail that we're going back on. It's mostly to get there to fish.
That'll be good. Should we get rolling?
Let's go.
Welcome to Kodiak.
A lot of our rescues are medevac type of rescues. We have some hunting accidents, some hiking accidents, hypothermia, and to actually go out there and understand, you know, how slippery shale is or how powerful water is. For the young officers to see that, I think, is just invaluable, and it helps give them a better understanding of what the folks that we're rescuing face.
We have the best job in the world stationed out here in Kodiak. All the search and rescue and flying we get to do. And then on days like this, you get to come out on a nice sunny day in October, catch some salmon. It's beautiful to come out here on your downtime and enjoy the outdoors, Kodiak style.
How's that for beautiful Alaskan salmon?
We got a great bunch of folks at the air station, and any time we get a chance to get out and do something together, especially something as fun as taking the four-wheelers out and catching a few fish, it's pretty awesome.
Kodiak Operation, Lieutenant Evan. Okay. We had a call from district. They had gotten a transmission on a personal locator beacon on a Raspberry Island. It's suspected that there's a hunter out there, and he activated it, and that sends a signal which broadcasts his position. And every time that signal is received and transmitted, the Coast Guard gets a position. So they got about a 6 mile triangle that the helicopter crew is going to search in.
Jason Emmons came and found me, told us we have a call. The first indication that we had, all we was, is we knew it was coming from a personal locator beacon. We knew where it was coming from. It was coming from an island north of Kodiak, and we know it's multiple GPS positions. We don't have any other kind of indication of what you're dealing with, if it's somebody who's lost, if it's somebody who's cold, if somebody's had a run-in with wildlife. You don't know what it is. So we're like, okay, let's go check it out.
Stay Rescue 6006. We are airborne from Air Station Kodiak. We are en route to Raspberry Island. Over.
Roger.
Alaska is a great environment to be able to use all the new tools we have in the helicopter. And so this is a perfect example of one night where we can use absolutely everything we have on the helicopter, including a direction finding equipment, night vision goggles, infrared camera, radar, all of our radios. We're using everything just to find these guys.
Here's the mouth of the river. I want to start to follow it up. I want to bring on the searchlight. I want to slow us up a little bit too. Roger that.
The initial GPS position is sitting up on a mountain ridge, a mountain that goes up to about 1,500 feet, and we're navigating between sea level and 500 feet. We're going to work our way up this mountain towards the GPS position, looking for any kind of signs of distress. We still don't know what we're looking for, but of course it's at night, it's raining, we got low visibility, and we need to find their heat signature using our infrared sensors.
There's a spot right there. That's an animal. More than likely, yeah.
Yeah, laying down. Every heat signature could potentially be the guy that you're looking for. We're picking up all sorts of animals.
Come down a little bit. Can you come down? What is that right there?
Oh.
You guys seeing that hot spot?
About where do you think it is?
There it is right there.
Oh, yeah.
Mark position.
It could be a person.
We have a call. All we knew was coming from a personal locator beacon. We knew where it was coming from. It's coming from an island north of Kodiak. And we know it's multiple GPS positions. We don't have any other kind of indication of what you're dealing with. If it's somebody who's lost, if it's somebody who's cold, if somebody's had a run-in with wildlife, you don't know what it is. So we're like, okay, let's go check it out.
Come down a little bit. Can you come down? What is that right there?
Oh.
You guys seen that hot spot?
Oh, yeah.
Mark position.
It could be a person.
There's all sorts of wildlife on Raspberry Island. I was picking up elk and bears, and it's like, is that a person? We'd fly over it again, and it's a deer or an elk.
Looking for any signs of distress, anything at all.
Oh, there it is.
Got something.
I got something, yep.
There's a fire right there.
Roger, I got it out at 2 o'clock.
Fire going. Stand by to mark an out position. Stand by to mark. He's waving hand.
Yeah, somebody waving hand.
Stand by to mark. Now. Mark him no position.
Marked.
Sector Anchorage, we have located the POB. We're not able to contact people yet. They're on the ground. Over.
This is Sector Anchorage. Roger, you located the POB.
Two tents and one person there.
Roger. Nice job, guys. There's a couple of level spots here.
We circled it a few times, had a good crew discussion about how we're going to get in there, and we're able to do what's called a rough area landing. And the tricky part about a rough area landing is, especially with the tall tundra grass that you find a lot up here in Alaska, is you don't know if there's potholes, you know, if there's rocks or anything that might damage the helicopter or that you could potentially get stuck in, even the mud.
I got the landing zone in sight. It's going to start to creep in.
We just did a real slow descent. And, you know, my crew's got his head poking out the door, giving me commands.
Easy down, hold. We're looking good. There's a pair of reading instructions. Easy down, tail is on deck.
The guy is over at our 9 o'clock.
All right, I see him over there.
Eric, you know, his job is to get out there, assess the survivors, and give us a call back. And that's exactly what he's going to do. He's going to give us a call, and we're waiting for, you know, hey, what's going on? How many people do we have? What condition are they in? Are they lost? Are they cold? Are they injured? What do we have?
I walked over, and then first thing in my mind is I saw the two guys. I was thinking, oh, boy, they hit the button because their friend hasn't come back. So we're going to be up all night, you know, having to try to locate somebody who doesn't have a PLB on them. But turned out one of the individuals is the individual who hit the button, and he was the one who was in trouble. He was cold. He was shivering. And after talking to him, he didn't want to leave. So he assured me that he was fine.
Rescue 6006, rescue swimmer.
6006, go ahead.
Roger, we got two individuals over here. The one that hit the button, he was in bad shape with hypothermia, but he's warmed up, and he seems to be thinking he's going to do better here, and he's not need to leave tonight.
Hypothermia is a tricky one because, unfortunately, the hypothermic victims who have been found in the wilderness have often been found naked because the body and the brain will play tricks on you, thinking that you're actually much warmer than you really are.
That guy's still, he's like shivering, or he's like shaking his arms and stuff like he's cold. Let's just have a good talk with the swimmer because I know from a medical standpoint, like people who
think
they're good aren't.
Right.
Hey, Eric.
Sir.
Give him a good once-over as far as his medical condition, you know, because hypothermic people have bad judgments, and if he says he's good, he might not be good.
Aye, sir.
I asked the guy, I said, are you sure you're okay? You know, if you're cold, you're miserable, you know, you need to be able to warm up. You know, otherwise it's just going to get worse and worse. He said, yeah, I'd like to go. So I got on the radio and called the pilots and said, hey, listen, these guys both had a change of heart and they want to come with us now.
You walk a fine line when you have to either convince people they do or they don't need help, you know?
Yeah.
It's tough.
There they are right there, coming through the weeds.
Oh, they've got weapons, too. Are those guns safe?
Roger, yeah, we cleared them all. They got four of them. We cleared them all.
All right, thanks.
Ready for takeoff, sir.
Roger that.
All right, you're clear. Clear up.
Go ahead and arrange the ambulance to meet us when we get back.
Roger.
We got our guy up front here.
We landed here, and the individual who was cold went in the ambulance, and then the other guy stayed, and he had a plan to get to a hotel or know where his buddy's at so he could check on his friend.
The Coast Guard here in Alaska, they really are the best of the best. I would call them the varsity team, especially when it comes to search and rescue. And me and my friend are definitely a testament to that. We're back here safe, and everything is pretty much good to go because of these guys.
How you doing?
All right.
Scott Hamilton.
Vince Sanson, nice to meet you. I was a pilot.
Appreciate it.
All right, glad you guys are back safe.
When we talked to them, they said the guy who hit the button, his core temperature was 93 degrees, so he was cold. That makes you feel good that it wasn't just because someone was uncomfortable, but because they were really in trouble.
Finally got the news for being medically disenrolled. It was very devastating because this is my dream. It's what I want to do coming into the Coast Guard, is just to be a rescue swimmer. And now that I can't do that right away, I have to look at other options for the time being until maybe I can go back into the program.
Due to the forecasted amount of time that would take him for recovery and then to get back to where he's fit for full duty to train properly, it just wasn't an option to let him remain in the program.
I think it was a great experience. I think I learned a lot. The ASTs, the rescue swimmers, what they do, it's incredible. And I wish I could be a part of that someday.